charge the ion accelerator. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. We are the Bell Assault Podcast, joined by Adam Camilleri.
G'day.
And Tanya Gates.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome. This is episode 500.
Holy moly.
Get hyped.
500. Actually, technically, when you add in like vendor spotlights and bonus episodes, probably like 530, so 540, something like that. But still, no less, a milestone. And thanks to everybody who's been with us for a while, or it's your first episode. Welcome. We talk a lot about Warhammer. We do Warhammer-related things. And if you like that kind of stuff, you come to the right place.
My absolute privilege and honor to be here in episode 500. Thank you very much for having me, Paul.
Welcome. And we're going to probably call this the end of season two, and the next episode would be start of season three.
We were literally just joking about how season one went for like 10 years. Season two was like 6 months. Season three, whatever. Four episodes. That's what you get.
Like, build in some breaks every now and then or whatever, or at least an excuse to, reevaluate, do something different. I think, now, don't quote me on this, but I think the next episode will also have a video component that people can go check out on the YouTube page. I actually got a message on YouTube like, yo, where are you at? I'm like, well, I've been lazy. That's not just saying lazy, but... but that's certainly one way that people do enjoy the show. And I think if we're going to work in a video component and start doing some that stuff more frequently, then yeah, let's have folks check us out over there if they want to.
I mean, we should play into our skills and talents. And, we, unlike some other people, we don't really have faces for radio. So we should put our faces forward,
We'll do what we can. And plus, maybe show off some of the models we're talking about, like some of the techniques and everything. But, a lot of opportunity there. But we're going to be doing the core content of what we do, which is talking about like how to get the most out of these armies and factions that we like. Talk about the new stuff coming up. If you are just joining us or recently joining us, we do have another regular member of the cast, Red, who is not here with us. Work called. And we're recording a little bit of an off hour than we normally would, or off day than we normally would. So there's more to the show. Again, if you're new, just want to give a nice welcome to everyone. And next week is Adepticon. Got that coming up. Want to talk about that a little bit. One of the largest destination events in the land. In my opinion, you've heard me say this before, one of the closest things we have to a convention, a real convention in our space, just centered around miniature gaming as a whole. And I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too, man. I can't wait. I'll be jumping on a plane in, about 36 hours from now? And jet setting my way, your way. And it is going to be another spectacular. I like to call it Adepticon, because you can, Adepticon. It's cringe as hell. I love it though.
I adept a can't, so I'm just gonna watch the streams.
That's what you should do. Yeah, if you can. Yeah.
If speaking of streams, come check us out covering on the Games Workshop Twitch stream. You'll hear a couple of familiar voices there. Might even see some players that you know over the course of the weekend. We're going to be covering multiple game sets, I believe, and we'll try to get that schedule up, or somebody will put the schedule up, or check out my socials on Twitter or Instagram to find out when that kind of stuff is happening. But over the course of the weekend, if you are hanging out in front of your computer or near your computer and want to chat with people about Warhammer live, you're going to get the opportunity to do it next weekend. While we're in Chicago, going to be checking out Portillo's, not sponsored, but want to get some hot dogs.
Man, you hype this place up so much.
There's a burger place too nearby also that's called Kuma's Corner, and last year they started giving out special like D6s, like two Kuma's Corner dice if you got the Adepticon burger, and I need those dice. I've now decided I have to get them every time, and I'll be really upset if I don't get out to get them. It's so difficult to get out.
Are they going
to
be like different colors every year so you can have like a collection?
These are different colors than last year. They posted a picture.
You're going to have to post a picture to your socials if you get them.
I hope I get them. Hope I can get out. It's when you're doing the streaming, sometimes it's difficult to get out. It's never in the middle of the day and sometimes rarely at night. But, when dice are, on the line, got to sum it up, the strength and the courage and get it done.
So what color are the dice this year?
They're a gray color with the logo is a bear in a circle.
Oh, I'm in. I also want those. Dang it.
Look, put it on the list for next year. Adepticon is a destination event. But anyway, enough about that. Hopefully you come check us out. If you didn't know we did, do it. We do it. And it's going to be a fun time. We always have a blast watching the games, talking about the games, and hanging out with chat. This week, though, folks are going to get their opportunity to pre-order the Tau Army Box. And I say Tau Army Box. It's not an army box like you've seen from the Tau before. Brand new models. This may be the first army box that has 100% all new models and the codex and the army cards and some other little cool things in the box.
Yeah, when I had a first had a look at it, I had to have actually stop and have a think. Is this the first time we've seen an army box that had entirely new models in it? I know the Votan one technically did, but that was a full army release. I'm not sure it counts. But we definitely, like, I thought about the Black Templar one, but that had a Redemptor in it, so it didn't count. But this is 100% brand freaking spanking new stuff.
Yeah, that's not
a
starter box.
Very exciting.
You know, like one of the edition launch boxes that had new models all in it.
Yeah, I think it's spectacular box, and it's going to be very interesting to unpack all the goodies therein.
Yeah, and so we'll talk about some of the things that you can expect to see out of the book, and you know, and then some changes. We got to talk about the crew. Look, we have to talk about the crew. I know people have been kind of almost like clamoring for a way to play a crew heavier, crew centric attachment, and this book is going to allow that to happen.
Yeah, exactly right. For the first time ever, essentially, you are fully supported and fully encouraged to play a mono crew. For better, there is some good stuff and there's some bad stuff here.
Well,
as with an army that has a very small, albeit brand new and beautiful model range, you're pretty limited in your options. But I got to say, man, I looked at just quickly, they have some of the best enhancements in the game. Straight up, just straight up, the enhancement that they have are incredible.
Yeah, we can talk about the potency of the list, and that'll be up to everyone's own device. And don't forget, sometimes we come at this from a very matched play centric view of it.
Yes.
But there are multiple different ways to enjoy the game. So just know that when we're talking about some of these stats in context of a matched play multi round, you know, competitive type event, that may be a different view than folks have if they're looking at this through any of the other lenses. And you know, any way you enjoy this game.
Absolutely.
Where do you want to start? I mean, we can start with the crew hunting pack, but we get, maybe with the base army rule of the game. So, of the Tau. So they have the rule for the greater good, which essentially allows you kind of pair up your units to be the observer and the blaster.
Yeah, I mean, feel free to edit this out, but I always call this the Biggie Smalls rule. You have your biggie and you have your smalls, and you have your small unit that's supporting your biggie unit. So your biggie unit does the thing more better. And essentially you have two units, one of them generally small and cheap that you don't mind using as a utility role, that essentially points at a unit that both units can see. And then the biggie unit sees it and shoots it and deads it more better. And that is the technical way to explain it to all involved.
Very technical. Love it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
An observer and then the guided unit. So each time this occurs, a model in the guiding unit makes an attack that targets the spotted unit, improve the ballistic seal characteristic of the attack by one. And if their observer unit has the marker-like keyword, the attack has the ignores cover ability. That's pretty strong. It does have a little bit of a terms and condition, I think is what you call it, Adam.
Yeah, see, that's, yeah, yeah.
A little TNC here is that each time a model in the guiding unit makes an attack that does not target their spotted unit, worsen the ballistic skill characteristic of that attack by one. So I guess that's to keep players with the suits with multi-weapon systems and stuff a little bit more focused. A little bit of a balance, yeah, internal balance on that.
I think that is the intent. I'm not that's the one part of the rule that I find is a bit rough, because it's already you having to jump through a hoop of like saying, okay, if I want to guarantee this unit is dead, I have to expose two units to guarantee getting this job done to make this army rule work. And then so many Tau units, like you said, have multiple different systems attached. They have, you know, smart missile systems, they have missile pods, they have fusion blasters and plasma rifles, on top of having, you know, heavy rail rifles and multiple missile pods and ions, et cetera, et cetera. And you really want to, you know, optimize if you're trying to do the best you can with the miniatures that you have available to you. You want to optimize, you know, sometimes multiple targets. But this one is pretty much putting your army on rails. and pretty much pointing you, you know, like a horse with blinkers on. This is what you got to do. This job only. And for the greater good, I think amplifies that. The title of the rule amplifies this unit has to go for the greater good. And if you think about it like that, a little bit of an easy pill to swallow.
Well, let's talk about what actually exists in the game too. It's like, granted, you want efficiency out of your unit. We were even talking about, you know, in another show that we do, like Dread Knights being over to go and like shoot and threaten multiple targets and what have you. But that really only exists in like a couple of the factions you'll see out there. There are a lot of, you know, big tanky units or knight type level threats that you really do want to focus on just one unit or one target to burn down in a lot of factions you see out there right now. Or is that am I flawed in that perspective?
Oh, no, absolutely not. No, absolutely not. It's very like there are so many matchups where like you play against custodies and you're like, oh, no, I have to shoot everything at the super ultra deadly custodies unit. This is terrible. You know, you're not going to feel bad about it, are you? You're not going to feel bad about splitting fire into somebody who's got a Land Raider Redeemer. And you're like, I want every gun, every single one that I have. But in reality, when you play it out, the spotting and guided unit, it's going to be very clear to you which units require these buff or which units you're going to prioritize giving these buff to. It's not like every unit has to be paired up with a Biggie Smalls, you know? It's not like every unit needs its smaller, cheaper counterpart. You know, you're going to know which units warrant this kind of investment and then which units work logistically with how this rule plays. And so unlike some effects where it's just a blanket buff, this one is worth the squeeze on the units that justify it. And there are many in the book.
When you don't need to do this, you don't need the extra sustained hits or the blizzard skill. Just don't do it.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, if your model already has ignores cover, you know, for example, you know, no point using the marker light one on that one to give it ignores cover. You already hit on threes, or you already have rerolls from other facet or plus ones to hit or whatnot. You know, you don't need this buff at all. Use it judiciously somewhere else, or just shoot with both units at full capacity and leave yourself open for the chance to split fire and do other things should more information become apparent.
I can definitely feel like, of course, as soon as we've said it, that it's going to be uncommon, that it's going to happen to the first player that rolls out and tries. Like, but I do think it's going to be a real uncommon when it hampers you as much as maybe, you know, you perceive it might.
One thing I will say again to G-Dub's credit is that it looks to be like whatever they decided to be the index detachment looks to be one of the better ways to play the army after the credits comes out anyway.
Ooh, hang on a second. We're going to get there in just 1 second. Before we go there, I want to talk about the other, like another change that I think may take some folks a little getting used to, and that's the drones.
Yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
The only thing that's really changed for drones, and maybe people who haven't been paying attention to the index or people who've been waiting for the curse to come back to Tau, drones are no longer models in the game. There is ostensibly their counters or something to represent that a unit has an upgrade. They don't have a wounds profile. They can't be removed. They can't be targeted. They're essentially an upgrade for another unit, and they represent a token on the table. Of course, a gun drone represents that the unit has been upgraded to have extra shots and extra guns. Marker drones been upgraded to have the marker like keyword, etc., and can, you know, get the extra observer goodness. But yeah, they have a really different role that we haven't seen before. And I have to say, if I had to guess, drones have been a very hard thing to balance and get right for as long as I can remember.
Well, so they come on and off the model sometimes, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think it's cool, don't get me wrong. And this is kind of a very sleek way of dealing with them. But, you know, my creative positions of awkwardness.
They've simplified it, which I think is a good thing for a lot of newer players as well. Because, I mean, there was times when a newer player would shoot at a Tau Crisis suit team suboptimally and would kill a handful of drones rather than impacting any of the actual firepower. And, you know, it did leave a lot of feel bad experiences open, especially, I mean, I know I was, you know, playing on, I was like riding the line of trying to get a job done really hard into some Crisis suits and some other things. And like, 10% variance. Oh, cool. I didn't take any firepower. I just killed the drones. That would happen a lot. And now the drones just represent an upgrade to the model. So a perfect example would be the Ghost Kill. Comes with two spicy special drones, and each one of them represents that once per battle, they can zero a damage. They can just, okay, you rolled a melter shot. That's going to be melter six into me. I'm just not going to worry about that. That is zero, and I'm going to move on with my life. And the two drones represent that it has that ability twice.
Oh, zero damage sounds real good. Now, sorry, I got in the way of you talking about that detachment coming up.
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting to unpack a lot of the detachments. The Kalyon detachment, which is the index detachment that they gave us at the start, has changed a little bit. One of the things was that the Patient Hunter ability, which is the detachment rule, which gives you sustained hits from the third baton round onwards, did allow you to split fire previously. And now it means that you have to shoot a unit that is spotted for you. You have to, you know, be guided into that to get the sustained. So it took a little bit of a change, not too big, not too bad. And then one of their enhancements got removed and replaced by a redeploy enhancement, which is an altogether an upgrade because it was better than the one they'd lost, because the one they lost was very forgettable.
From the index got shifted around to some of the other detachments. Yeah. And there's been some changes to the stuff here.
Yeah, correct. And then two of the detachments came out and two new ones came in. The six up, feel no pain stratagem came out. I can't remember which one came in for it, though. I know the wall of mirror.
Coordinate to engage.
Ignores cover. Anyway, they lost two strats. They got two new ones. Altogether, Kalyon still in a good place. Still perfectly acceptable.
Tempting Trap is pretty good, too. We can kind of talk about some of these in a little bit more unpacking them. But the Kalyon, you know, a buddy of mine used to refer to this as Kalyon is killing, you know, Mont Ka, the movie one. That's how you can kind of associate them in your brain. And that redeploy, incredibly strong, if you ask me. And that's the solid image projection unit.
Which one are you talking about?
Players have deployed their armies, select up to three Tau Empire units from your army and redeploy them. When doing so, you can set those units up in strategic reserves if you wish, regardless of how many units are already in strategic reserves.
Yeah, having access to a redeploy is just a good place to be.
I mean, when you're already, we're playing a game, some formats out there use player place terrain, some formats, you know, use set terrain, different degrees of line of sight blocking. More often than not, I see this redeploy almost used as almost like a trap, you know, to where your opponent knows you have it, but they really can't do anything to stop you from doing it. There's nothing they can do to stop you from doing it. And it forces them to divide up their forces differently than they would normally deploy in most cases when you have this threat of being able to do this. And then you're going to do it, but they couldn't stop you.
Yeah, yeah, they really can't stop you. And a lot of your units have scout now, especially if you take some of the new crude stuff. So redeploying when you have scout is a very, very beautiful place to be.
I shouldn't say that you're going to do it. You could easily not do it, and then you've gotten them out of position. You know, so it's really a difficult thing to navigate for your opponent just for the fact that it exists. And that's an enhancement for the Kalyon detachment. A couple of those other strategies you were talking about is the tempting trap. This is where you nominate an objective that is not, I think it's not, can't be in your opponent's deployment or deployment zone.
Yes, that's right.
And then until the end of the phase, each time a model in your unit makes a range attack that targets an enemy unit within range of your trap objective marker, add one to the wound roll.
Yeah, I don't mind this one. The only issue I have is you can't use it in the first and second battle rounds, but this is an exceptionally good way to clear objectives very effortlessly and easily. That's not too expensive either. That's not a 2 CP strat. It's a 1 CP strat. I like it.
Yeah. All the T's and C's, as it were, on that do kind of limit it, but at the same time, later in the game, when you may have fewer units to engage with, you want to make the most out of everything, and that is pretty good. We'll spend some time on the other detachments as well, but the point blank ambush, this is, I think, another pretty good one. One Tau Empire unit from your army that has not been selected to shoot this phase until the end of the phase. Each time a model in your unit makes a range attack that targets enemy units within 9, improve the AP characteristic of that attack by 1.
Yeah, it's another pretty legit stratagem.
For 1 CP.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Can be brutal. Yeah, just wanted to, like, that's a real, I think, aggressive one that I think a lot of players will start out with as before they start to ease into the other detachments.
Yeah, perfectly fine place to start for sure. The next one is the one I'm excited about. How do you guys feel about the old Mont Ka?
This has been kind of will they, won't they with the Mont Ka. Like, how do you design your force? What do you do? What's standing out to you about this one?
This is the, so the only criticisms I have of Kaoyan was that it was the, to, in my mind, it was the wrong stage of the game. And of course, it's thematic, you know, the Kaoyan, even in previous editions, has always been the back end of the game, the Monkar, and the front end of the game. A lot of 10th edition games are front loaded, as in, so turn one, two, and three is where the game is won and lost. The positioning, the jousting, the trading, the so to speak, and the pressure game all are activated in the first three turns of the game. If your army only starts getting going on turn three, you can find yourself in a bad position, especially if you've been playing to hold on and, you know, get into good position on turn three. You could just find yourself, you know, your opponent's 20 points up and they just kind of run away from you now and, you know, you waited for nothing. Whereas Monkar is front-loaded. During the first, second, and third battle round, Tau Empire models have lethal hits, and then when they're guided, they have assault. So just to your point, mate, the movie one, the Monkar, so you can advance and shoot. And of course, they have a stratagem for auto advance six, which is absolutely fantastic in this one.
Out of the equation.
Yeah, exactly right. And I feel like this is having your damage and your efficiency front loaded is much better than back loaded, just in the way the 10th edition is played at the moment. That could definitely change as we see different mission packs, if we see different armies come into the fore and the meta change and evolve. But right now, if I had to pick, I'd rather a buffs on turns 1, 2, 3 than 3, 4, 5.
And that's stratagem just, yeah, that you were talking about is aggressive mobility. It's a 1 CP stratagem. In your movement phase, select a Tau Empire unit that is that you've not been selected to move. Advance 6, no roll required.
Yeah. Superb. They have one of the, or they have two of the best best enhancements that I've seen in a long time. Strike Swiftly is at the start of the battle round, you just pick two of your units, not the unit that the character's in with the enhancement, just two of your units in your army within 6 of the bearer, and they have Scout 6 now. Usually you pay points and then the unit and so the character and then the unit the character attaches to gets Scout. This one is this guy can just pick the two closest good units and be like, all right, you're going to Scout and you're going to Scout, or you're going to Scout and I'm going to Scout, and yeah, double to Scout 6. Very, very, very good. And then the other one, which one is it? Is it the coordinate exploitation?
Each time and that Strike Swiftly enhancement is not... So some of these other enhancements are actually exclude things like a Kroot Shaper model.
Yeah.
Some other Kroot things. This does not have any exclusion, just says a Tau Empire model for the Strike Swiftly.
And the other one is Strategic Conqueror. At the start of the first battle round before the first turn begins, select one objective marker on the battlefield. While the friendly Tau Empire unit, model is within range of that objective and the bearer is on the battlefield, add one to the objective control characteristic. So you just get +1 OC on that objective for the entire game from you just pick at the start of turn one. And so it's really, really, really powerful. So you can almost flag to your opponent like, that one is real easy for me to hold. So I'm going to line up all my guns on the other one. I'm going to hold that one and blow you off that one. And this is going to be the crux of the game. Can you stop me from just easily holding this objective with, you know, 30, 40 objective control that I can just throw on it at a whim. So I think that's a really good enhancement as well.
That does sound pretty good. Man, there's cool things to pick from in this. And, you know, we haven't talked about the guns yet. Like, what can do this cool stuff?
how do you guys... So one of the... I suppose we'll talk about one of the elephants in the room. I guess the form and modes of Crisis Suits, which is one of the iconic units of the and one of the kind of iconic identities of the Tau Army, has changed quite a lot. How do we feel about it?
I think what you're referring to is the fact that the Crisis Suits no longer have a bunch individually weapon options. You pick them in groups now, so the Crisis Suits are actually broken out into specific units. So like the Crisis Sunforge battle suits give you the, I think that's the Melta Shots. Yeah, it is the Melta Shots.
That is the Melta Shots.
Then the Crisis Fire Knife battle suits give you plasma shots, and then the Star Scythe battle suits give you the flamer options. And yeah, as you can imagine, they have different rules associated with them. That's one of the coolest things about this edition, is that the complexity and like the specialness of the unit is right on the data card of the thing. So take the Sunforge as an example. Each time a ranged attack made by the model in this unit is allocated to a monster or vehicle unit, you can reroll the wound roll and you can reroll the damage roll. That's the Sunforge ability. Good. Yeah, on the Crisis Sunforge battlesuit. What are you giving up here? Well, you're giving up any type of different modes of fire in that Crisis Suit unit. You're looking at a unit of up to 3 Crisis Suits. The unit composition is 1 Crisis Suit, Sunforge, Shasvir. Don't come at me. In two crisis suits, Shashui.
Bless. I'm happy it's not me. That's all I'm happy about right now.
And then every model is equipped with two fusion blasters and battlesuit fists. You can give gun drones and all that kind of stuff, but that's what your base stuff is.
Yeah. So it's actually really interesting to see the redistribution of perspective from here, because what we used to have was if they had still had six suit crisis units in this codex, they would be a world ender. In this codex, with the buffs that they are to battle suits in one of the detachments and in Monkar and everywhere, they would absolutely be a problem. There is a stratagem in the battle suit detachment to deep strike 3 inches away.
That's the retaliation cadre that you're talking about. Yeah. That favors. Look, we talk in. Especially when you're doing shorthand communication to someone across the table from you, you talk in effects, like that's the plus one, that's the this or whatever. But you're specifically talking about the new detachment called the Retaliation Cadre, which has a large focus on battle suits.
Yeah, the battle suit one. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. The Bonded Heroes is a special rule there, where you get plus one strength within shooting at a target within 12 inches and plus one AP shooting at something within six. If you had six crisis suits, that could deep strike for within 3 inches for two CP, which is one of the stratagems.
That is the shortened blade is the stratagem you're referring to, that does allow you to be set up more, that is more than 3 inches horizontally away from all enemy models.
Yeah, so that unit is a world ender. Happily, they're down to three crisis per unit, because some of these new rules would absolutely take them straight to the sun, in a good way. Sorry, not to shot out of a cannon into the sun, into the stratosphere, into the power scale. As it sits right now, they're still quite good. We'll have to wait and see where the points end up, because the points in the back of the book, as we know, are perfectly good, perfectly adequate for anybody wanting to pick up and play with them as they sit right now. And especially with these new units and they've changed in modality and their form and function, and like all the new crew stuff, you know, use the rules in the back of the book, get them on the table ASAP. But usually we'll see a update to the Minotaurum Field Manual to incorporate these into the match play systems. And so we'll have to wait and see where the points end up for a lot of the crew and a lot of the new crisis suits and some of the different things that have changed. Right now, they're sitting kind of okay for points. You wouldn't go out and take, you know, three of each of these. Like, you wouldn't go take three Sunforge suits. You wouldn't go take 3x3 Fire Strikes or 3x3 of the other ones. But there are some very good options here. In like the Star Scythe squad that can have two burst cannons double flame or double burst cannon. And I do honestly believe if you are taking these, you double down on one of the guns, you take two of one of the guns, and then you buff them appropriately. They get plus one armor penetration when shooting against each time this unit targets a
monsters
range attack.
Or vehicles?
Apart from monsters or vehicles.
Oh, apart
so anything that's not a monster vehicle. Yeah, yeah. So cavalry, beasts, swarms, infantry, all that good stuff. And they're able to shoot in a turn in which they fell back. Now, that 3-inch deep strike, so you take two burst cannons, that's 8 shots apiece, that's 24 shots for the squad. You deep strike within 3 inches, and you trigger the plus one strength from being within 12, and then the plus one AP from being within 6, and they've got 24 shots at strength 6, AP 2, 1 damage. And then if you guide them with a marker light unit, they can have ignores cover and be hitting on threes as well. That is a very good objective clearing unit versus just about anything that isn't, like you said, a monster or a vehicle. They're very, very, very good. And if they're well pointed, that will be a very, very nice squad to take here, there, and everywhere.
I know all Tau players are going to be real sad to hear that after you use that stratagem that lets you deep strike within three, or sorry, just out of three, you can't charge.
Pull one out, everybody. The dream is dead.
Yeah, the shortened blade does have a unit target with a stratagem is not eligible to declare a charge in the same turn.
Whoa. Woe is me. Whoa. The melancholy has befallen me.
And that's the Retaliation Cadre. And the special rule for that is each time a Tau Empire battlesuit model from your army makes a range attack that targets a unit within 12, improve the strength characteristic of that attack by 1. If that attack targets a unit within 6, improve the armor penetration characteristic of that attack by 1 as well. So that's one of the things you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
With that proximity, this ability, and all those shots that are from what are, you know, on paper the weakest weapon that we were describing, but that volume of fire might be a real problem.
Yeah. The double fusion suit is also very tidy as well. They take the increased strength really well. Going from strength 9 to strength 10 is a beautiful breakpoint in this game that gets you over the line into the majority of vehicles out there that are, you know, that gives you wounding on 3s into a lot of the transports that are toughness 8, toughness 9 still, and then gives you the a force to wound re-rolling on that squad into things like, Armiger Warglaives and War Dogs, Gladiators, stuff like that.
Re-roll, so I think that's damage a really good too. So while you're on the wounds, buddy. Of course, you got to get the wound there in the first place, but how many times the pain of rolling that one or two on the D6 after you've already done all the work to get through the invulnerable save, you know, get through the hit, get through the wound.
One of the enhancements I'd like to point out for the Retaliation cadre is the Starflare ignition system. Battlesuit model only, at the end of your opponent's turn, if the bearer's unit is not within engagement range of one or more enemy units, you can remove that unit from the battlefield and place it into strategic reserve. There has been a rules commentary update that happened a couple of months ago that denoted that if you do have Deep Strike and you're placed in strategic reserve, you can arrive back from via Deep Strike. And so this unit can Deep Strike 3 inches away, blow something up, back into reserve, come back 3 inches away, blow something up, back into reserve. Really, really, really cool. Naturally, if you're 3 inches away, you know, they can just walk over and try and punch you, but you know.
Yeah, I don't think you can bounce on the same turn you come down as a. Like, you cannot...
Oh, no, you have to live through to the end of your opponent's turn.
Okay, and then you good.
That's what I mean.
You know, so you want to get that lost in the communication. Yeah,
sorry. You Deep Strike down in your turn, blow something up, make it into the end of their turn, go back in, come back down in your turn, make it through the end of their turn, et cetera, et cetera. The other really cute one, and I was a bit of a naysayer on this one, the internal grenade pack. This is spicy. So the fire and fade effect that was taken out of the Kalyon detachment was placed into this detachment, into the Retaliation cadre, so you can shoot and then move afterwards. Now, there's a upgrade called the internal grenade packs. Battlesuit model only, the bearer has the grenades keyword, which is cute, and each time the bearer ends a normal move, you can select one enemy unit that it moved over and then roll 6d6. Each 4+ is one mortal wound. So if you use the grenades stratagem and use this, you'll throw, you know, 12 dice, and then on every 4+ you will deal a mortal wound. What's cute is that if you use it on the Cold Star commander, who I believe moves 10 or 12 base, let me just double check that, moves 12 base, you can, after it is shot, so you fly over them, use grenades, and you bomb them for the 12 D6, 4+ mortal wounds, and then you shoot and use the stratagem to move again, and you fly back over them and drop the bombs again. And so you ostensibly can throw 18 dice, and every 4+ is a mortal wound in the same turn. It does cost 2 CP to do this, though. One for for a grenade and one for shoot and scoot. Against something like a Catan, which is just a real, you know, bundle of joy to try and get past.
You're mentioning the Catan because that's cool. Something that the Necrons are really heavily focused on. And one of the reasons, a very stout codex, but one of the reasons they're being so dominant is that people are having to change what they put in their list to be able to effectively contain and or deal with Catan models because of their pretty unique profile.
There's such a localized place of extreme durability, and then especially the Nightbringer, extreme merely deadliness. Like, is ostensibly just as deadly as a Big Knight or a Rampage or a Gallant in combat, but is just incredibly durable for the size of the model. The guy's on like a 40 or 50 mil base, guys. He's minuscule, and then when he touches you, you're like, oh my god. I am so dead.
If they're on the same base as the Nightbringer and the Deceiver, are on 40 mils.
You're exactly right. They're tiny. They're tiny bases.
Void Dragon's a different thing altogether.
He's a different beast. He's a big lad. He's a big lad. Beautiful model, big lad.
What you're talking about, they present some interesting problems that are warping what folks take in their list, and people are taking things that can do 12 mortal wounds or 12, you know, basically guaranteed wounds to something.
Yeah.
And this you can achieve that.
Yeah, exactly right. You want a certain amount of damage potential, or you want to throw it all against the barn door, see what sticks, and then have something like this to pick up the spare. That picks up the spare and does like four to six very reliable mortal wounds. When you're throwing, I'm talking about that through a 5-up feel no pain that the Catan has. So you're throwing a possible 18 dice on 4+, you know, 4 to 6 is what you'd expect to go through the feel no pain once it's all said and done. And that's a little bit on the wrong side of the averages as well. So you're pretty happy with that. And that's after you may have pointed some rail guns and some, you know, some plasmas and fusions at him as well. But I would love to talk about the Crude Hunting Pack for a moment.
We will talk about them in just 1 second. We're actually going to take a break. We'll come back and talk about the Crude. And with this, what we're talking about is like stacking up abilities, guns. Guns are pretty potent still, as you would expect from Tau. So, well, we'll talk a little bit about that stuff here in a second. But let's take a break. We'll get a word from our sponsors, come back, talk about some Crude, and maybe a little hobby stuff. See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. Going to be talking about some Crute and a way to like play exclusively Crute if you so choose to do so, which is kind of cool. But before we jump into that, I got invited to go on another show called the Heroes Brush Hour. Basically, you get 1 hour to paint a model versus one of the hosts of the show while chat gives you challenges that disrupts you painting over the course of that hour. I think they redeem like points, Twitch points, to be able to force one or both of the contestants to do certain things or not do certain things over the course of the hour to try to make it more difficult to complete the task or battle or whatever. All in good nature.
Did anybody redeem to make you paint with your non-dominant hand?
They did. I had to do squats. had to sing a song.
Did you have to use the biggest brush in your collection?
I did. So I actually, for this, I changed to over where I do the streaming and the recording from. So it was away from my normal paint table, but I did bring over 3 brushes with me. So it wasn't the absolute biggest brush that I had and wasn't the absolute smallest brush that I have to do the things, but I was still, you know, I was painting with a dry brush. and then trying to do large armor panels because I chose a Brutalis Dreadnought as my miniature to paint.
In oh, wow. 1 hour?
Yeah.
How'd you do?
Okay. I mean, yeah? It was primed Mephiston Red.
Okay, so they do allow you to prime one color.
I didn't know all the rules, but I was asked if that was okay. And
yeah, they don't allow Zenithal, so.
Well, mine was not. It was just Mephiston Red. But y'all know how I feel about metallics, and I was that stage like, oh, the next thing I'm doing this model is blocking in metallics. Maybe I should do it for a good cause. So a little bit of entertainment.
So did you win?
I did end up winning. I think they went easy on me though. I think
I don't know. I've won one and I've lost one.
It was fun.
Which one did you win? Did you win the first one or the second one?
I won the second one.
Okay. Oh, okay. No, yeah. No rhyme or reason then.
No, well the first one I did like I did a piece of terrain. It was like a little tractor thing that came in the Sector Mechanicus. It's very cute. And I thought I did a really good job, but the entire time I was like, there's no way I'm gonna get this done. So I had like an actual plan for the second one and I got it finished and I had like basing and some nice gradients and some nice punchy colors, and yeah, I think that's the trick. Punchy colors.
It was a fun show, and yeah, we'll certainly do it again and appreciate the invite, but it's, you know, nice to go on another show and hang out and do their thing. And then they also had a great live chat community, which is cool and a fun way to spend an hour. But I guess enough about that. I got my Brutalis Dreadnought completed enough, and I did actually post on Instagram the result of that 1 hour of painting to where I was able to go back and do a little bit more on it, and it's actually almost tabletop.
Ooh, nice.
So like about an hour and a half, got a Dreadnought to where I'm not embarrassed by it.
Not embarrassed by it? How would you feel embarrassed by a model?
Oh, well, so... Over the course, at the end of that hour, necessarily say it's not normally at the stage I would have taken a picture of
it. You know? Gotcha. Okay.
the red takes a lot of layers. Thankfully, it's forgiving. You know, you put the layers on there, it gets to a certain brightness of red that I like that matches the rest of the army. And, you know, look, I will say, if anyone's perusing the Fights with Dice Instagram, that's not the first picture I want them to land on.
You're just going to have to post like 2 pictures every day until it's farther down in your feed.
But it was a blast, and I'm thankful for the invite. And they're gonna be at Adepticon also, so gonna say what's up to them while I'm there. Gonna be fun times. So the Kroot Hunting Pack, brand new models coming out in the first opportunity people can get their hands on the books, the army cards. It's a wonderful box. I think basically if you're a Tau player, you're gonna want to grab it. I would expect it to sell out.
Yeah, I would 100% expect it to sell out. So the fact of the matter is there are so many people who will just play this army regardless of the rules because they have just been waiting so long. It's just going to happen. We know of people who are just buying it to paint it because the models are stunning. Yep. And for just a one purchase grab of just a phenomenal range of different painting styles, and I got to say, we talked about this as well. 40K, there are not many times where you get a box that doesn't have power armor in it. And anytime you do, you're like, ooh, I get to paint something different. This is great. This is fresh. Let's do it. And so many people just will gobble it up just because of that, just because it is a fresh new take. And oh, good Lord, the models, I love them. I love them all. I think they're incredible.
They really, really, really are. We'll talk about the stats here in a minute, but the Kroot Hunting Pack. Oh, as mentioned, I want to say it again. It will most likely sell out. So if you're listening to this and you're on the fence, and it's still available, you probably want to grab it because I'd have to suspect this will sell fast because it's got like the trifecta. It's new. It has the first opportunity to get the codex, and it has completely new models. And
yeah.
So yeah. all the stuff that leads to, don't miss out if you feel like you're going to regret it.
There's there's another thing you need to consider though. It has a really cute model in it, and yes. Anything that has cute things, like any box that has a cute model in it, is sure to sell out.
The ability of this detachment here is each time a Kroot model from your army makes an attack, add one to the hit roll if the target of that attack is below its starting strength. Add one to the wound roll as well if the target of that attack is below half strength. They have the Skirmish Fighters rule. Kroot models in your army have a 6+ invulnerable save against melee attacks and a 5+ invulnerable save against ranged attacks. If you select this attachment, Kroot Carnivore units from your army have the battle line keyword,
which means you can take up to 6 units of them. If you were just to explain this detachment to anybody else and just be like, so take away the Kroot from it, none of these words say Kroot anymore, and I tell you, all right, your whole army is going to +1 to hit if they've lost even one model, and they're going to +1 to wound if they've lost half their models. You're also going to get an invulnerable save. Army-wide, just everybody gets an invul now, and the unit that you want to already take a bunch of, you can now take 6 of. You would just be like, sign me up. Are there steak knives? Where do I get some more? I got to say, they throw the kitchen sink at the Kroot detachment. They absolutely do. They're like, they're trying real hard to make this thing go, to make the little birdie fly. Because the enhancements, like I said at the start, the enhancements are some of the best in the actual game. And I'll preface this. The rules are good. The detachment is good. The data sheets themselves and the points, we will have to see. Because right now the points are in the back of the book, lead this army to be like, I think it's a couple of units short of where it's going to end up being. And so I'm gonna not have a final verdict as of yet. Because right now I don't think it's quite there. But the rules are good. The models are phenomenal. The data sheets leave a little bit to be desired. But I can just start with any of these enhancements because they're all incredible. Range weapons equipped by models in the bearer's unit have ignores cover. And enemy units that are set up on the battlefield as reinforcements cannot be set up within 12 of the bearer. You're telling me that I get to give the unit just AP1, and I got to tell you right now, ignore cover to me right now means +1 AP against any unit worth killing. Because any unit that your opponent thinks is worth killing is usually in cover. If I'm saying to you, Paul, I would love to kill your Death Company. You know, Death Company are probably going to ruin me if I don't kill them. You're like, they're going to jump from cover to cover. You know, anytime I get to shoot them, they're going to be in cover because you know they're important for me to remove. And so when I see ignores cover, I'm like, well, anytime I'm shooting something relevant, that's just AP1, baby. And then how many armies are we up to that have a 3-inch deep strike? Most of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, having an infiltrated, you know, scrambler's ability, no ifs, no buts, you can't deep strike within 12 of this model. Stupendous ability. So strong. So important. And only going up in stock, only getting more powerful as more codexes come out and more people have deep strike shenanigans. Nomadic Hunter, while the bear is leading a unit, +3 move. And all the weapons equipped by the unit have assault.
I love this and.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah. You just double dipping on these abilities. This is
yeah,
great.
It's the literal, but wait, there's more. It could not be more of that. It could more nobody tell it. Yeah, yeah. So just plus three move. That is already good enough. You're taking things that move seven to move 10. And then, you know, declare a charge. And then you have assault. If you wanted to advance, you just still get to shoot anyway. The next one is, this one is probably the most iffy, mostly because the weapons that you're equipped with, you don't have a huge amount of, you know, things that are going to trigger this, but you do have one or two. All weapons equipped by the bearer have precision and devastating wounds. Now, there is one of the characters that has some anti-infantry, I believe, on a four-shot gun. I think they can, a three-shot gun, I think they can do up to six dev wounds, which could be quite cute in some circumstances, and then those can be precision as well. So that could be pretty spicy. And then the last one, it has the best name, Borthrog Gland. Borthrog. Borthrod Gland. Good old Borthrog Gland. Anyway, it's a crit shaper only for a flesh shaper only. Whilst the bearer is leading,
I'm just going to let you walk around in that one a little bit.
It's fine. It's fine. You had your turn with Shazvro or whatever it was. Shazvro. Is leading you to each time a model unit makes an attack, five pluses score a critical hit. Wowie. Crit fives, just as an enhancement. The enhancements are such bangers. So good. If you could take all four, you could consider taking all four. I would definitely leave the precision devastating wound ones off if I had to cut one of them and 100% take the other three, but you would not feel stupid for taking all four. They're so strong.
Yeah, that may, especially if you're taking a whole army of them. Why not? Just splurge. Get all the enhancements you can.
Yeah, take it all.
Take as many as you are able to do so. Now, I will say that the we're talking about the crew data sheets, and that is something we can talk about, like what their weapons are, what they do, what are some of the new units. You know, what's different than what people may have expected before? Like, do the crew hounds still behave the same way? I think when you are playing, if you're playing just all crew, you're probably going to need some enhancement and stratagem support and some
100%. So one thing I will say, every single crew model has scout seven. So every single one scouts, or essentially the entire army redeploys ostensibly, because if you don't want to push up the board, scout seven is just literally moving your army from behind cover onto the line if you go first, or from onto the line into safety if you go second, or moving into, you know, that ruin that's just outside your deployment zone. It means that you can jump on any and every mid-board objective turn one without needing to roll in advance as well, which is extremely powerful, extremely potent. Especially what I love about it is the fact that crew carnivores still have their sticky abilities. So they're still sticky objectives, or what we say, you know, essentially plant your faction's flag on an objective at the end of your command phase. And so you can really get on the board quickly, capture a bunch of objectives, and either decide to pull back or put the pressure on your opponent whilst not having to leave things on those objectives and still just, you know, send more.
The full role there is this: the field craft at the end of your command phase of this unit is within range of an objective marker you control. That objective marker remains under your control even if you have no models within range of it until your opponent controls it at the start of any turn. So basically, you claim these objectives early, your opponent has to get out there, wipe you out, and you control it until they take it from you at the start of their whatever the turn that is. So or you take it and then move somewhere else. You create this different problem for them if you're able to stay alive. So, you know, that the sticky objective is pretty strong. Remember that you put a token down or something like that.
But that's 100% cool
when you're dealing with something that is toughness three, no armor save.
Ah, invuln save though. Yeah.
Well, that's true, and they do have a 6+ save too, but I mean effectively a very slim survival chance with people focus on you being one wound times three.
So it's a lot of comparisons to be made with the Krutox Rampages and the Krutox Riders to stuff like Squighog Boys for orcs. They are, I think, Squighog Boys toughness 6 or toughness 7. Anyway, high toughness, multi-wound, decent output units, not a whole lot of AP to throw around, but a lot of attacks. Each one of the Krutox Rampages throws 7 attacks when they get into combat. On the charge, they'll have 3 attacks with Lance at strength 4, AP 1, 1 damage, and then 4 attacks with extra attacks and sustained hits 1, which is kind of cute, at 6 minus 1, 2 damage. And then each time they end a charge, very similar to Blood Crushes, I think this ability is pretty comparable. Roll a d6 for each model in the unit that is within engagement range of the enemy unit. You can only have units of 3 to 6 of these, so you can throw up to 6 of these dice. For every 4+, they take D3 mortal wounds. If one or more enemy models are destroyed as a result of this, that unit must take a battle shock test. And I love those early battle shock tests. So you take the battle shock test before the fight phase truly starts, because it starts in the charge phase. So you can use that to know if your opponent can interrupt or, you know, fight on death, stratagem use, stuff like that. So you get that foreknowledge to plan out your activations a lot better. I really like those ones that key early off in the charge or the start of the fight phase stuff.
Battle shock, you can't be the target of stratagems.
Correct. You lose your OC. So if you're trying to flip an objective, all of a sudden the job's done. You know, you'll hold it at the end of the turn for, you know, an overwhelming force or a storm hostile, stuff like that.
Yeah, I love that. The picture, you know, each one of these attachments has a picture up at the top with a, you know, determining, you know, just kind of showing what the army's about. And the picture up at the top has a Kroot Rampager absolutely stealing the lunch money of a Wraith Lord. So I think that's kind of cool.
That is kind of cool.
It looks like they've actually surprised, like, one Eldar Storm Guardian is, like, hanging out, like, hey, I belong here. And as you see one frame over, is the Wraith Lord getting his little armored head punched in. It's a cool picture. Very thematic. Although I hate to see that happen to the Eldari.
Oh, couldn't happen to a...
Yeah, I'm not too sad about it.
Not pouring one out just yet.
No, they had it coming.
Yeah, long time coming.
A lot of the stuff you just described is actually things that this army can get done in turn one because of that scout 7.
Yeah, 100%.
And when you put that many bodies forward, we don't know what the actual points are going to shake out, but the Kroot Carnivore squad is a 20, you know, Kroot squad.
Yeah, yeah. They move 7. You can put the enhancement in, so they move 10. So that if you go first, they scout 7, move 10, you've just gone 17 inches. There are some deployment maps where you are 1 inch away from their deployment zone after the end of the move. And that's if you don't advance, you know, you could declare a charge after that.
I mean, you got to expect these going to be sub 200 points so you could have conceivably easily 60 models that all do that on turn one.
Yeah. And honestly, I think that's where you would want to start with this. What are they at now? Kroot Carnivores, 170 for 20. That's not bad at all.
Yeah, for everything we're talking about of just burning time off, burning turns off the game.
Even outside of the Kroot detachment, I think Kroot Carnivores are fantastic. I think they're totally fine. The sticky objective ability is very takeable in any detachment that you choose. In this one, especially good, of course.
That enhancement we were talking about earlier that gives the units around the character scout, you know, like the Kroot Trail Shaper already has scout. So
yeah, every single Kroot model has scout 7 just on the data sheet. Every single unit just gets a little bit going first.
But you give him that enhancement and then have him give the scout to other Tau battle suits and stuff that don't, I mean, not taking him outside of the Kroot hunting pack.
Yeah, spot on. And yeah, you just really leverage scout. It's a fantastic ability.
It really is.
But you do know that you can also leverage the whole join the hunt ability. It's a cost 2 command points and it's basically just reinforcements for guard.
Ooh, yeah, the recycling strat.
Yeah. So it's only infantry, but you can also use it on the Kroot Hounds, which is really interesting.
Hmm. So just 20 Kroot, just 2 CP, go back into strategic reserve. So it's exactly the same as as the Imperial Guard. So you just absolutely recycle, same as our Endless Swarm as well, that they love to do with their Termagants and Gargoyles and stuff. That is really powerful.
Any phase, too. So it's not just in a specific set of circumstances. Oh, speaking of Kroot Hounds, we're actually talking... Are they pretty good? Kroot Hounds have kind of been like a sleeper unit. I think they've always been good for either they had a great point ratio or, you know, nice strength or whatever. Do they play the same?
Yeah, last edition, they really came to the fore as the cheapest utility unit that Tau had available to them. Like when people were like putting up banners on objectives and things like that and all those things last edition for their secondary points, Kroot Hounds were exceptional in the role. Now they sit somewhere very akin to, say, Nurglings. They don't have any objective control, but they do move 12, scout 7, so they just go 19 inches turn 1 if they want to. If they're within 6 of one or more friendly Kroot infantry units at the start of your command phase, they're able to declare a charge in a turn in which it advanced, which is nice. So you get advance and charge, go 19 and just charge and just tie things up. And then whilst they're within 12 of a Kroot character,
here it is.
They get objective secured 1. they get OC 1. So they go from 0 to 1. So they can actually hold objectives.
Within a foot of a character with a unit you can take up to 10 crude hounds. They're on, 40 mil bases or whatever. So
yeah. Yep, absolutely. String a ding ding, get them going. You know, you can travel a long way with them. I mean, we're not going to take these points as gospel just yet, but the points right now will give you an indication of where they may end up at some point in the future. But the crude hounds as they sit right now is 80 points, so 8 points per model. I think that's totally fine for a unit that goes 19 inches turn one.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about just utility at this point, not anything else. They used to be, I think, strength four on their bites, or their fangs, but they're strength three now. But three attacks, hit on threes, strength three, AP zero, one damage apiece. But the three attacks with a guaranteed charge turn one is not terrible. I say guaranteed. They can across the table.
So they come in fours, eights, and 12s in the current codex. The current index. And 8 models is 60 and 12 models is 90. So what did I say they are now?
8 points apiece. So
80 10. Points.
And
yeah.
The squad is 5 to 10. For the crew house.
Yeah, so they're relatively the same points as they are now. So you can expect them to be similar, you know, come a month or two, should that be the case. I think they're totally fine. Very acceptable.
I just like the utility. I mean, that is a lot of pressure that you're putting on your opponent to have to answer. And when you are tapping things, boxing things in, just with your large model count, and with the fact you got sticky objectives, you have to shift to play. If you're playing just crude and not using any of the battle suits or any of the things we've talked about, I think you really have to focus on just the utility of the card flips and proximity to the objectives.
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head. So now that I've unpacked a bunch of their data sheets, I got to say straight up, they don't kill things very quickly. And as you would assume, they're not a very technologically advanced.
Throwing rocks and...
Exactly Chapel. Right. Exactly right. Not a lot of armor penetration on those rocks is what we're seeing. But you're gonna have numbers, and you're gonna have a lot of tricks and a lot of jank. And so that's exactly right to your point. You gotta leverage that. You gotta leverage all your abilities, all your data sheet abilities, all your tricks and infiltrating and scouting and lone upping. Because the lone up character, and this is my tangent, the lone up character is fantastic.
This is the Crute Lone Spear. Now he's not in the box, so we gotta assume he's coming later.
Coincidence? I think not.
Yeah, is that what you're talking about? The Crute Lone Spear.
I am indeed. So this is a lone op, lone operative Scout 7 with stealth. It's a toughness 5, 6 wound character that's going to have a 5 up armor save and a 5 up invulnerable save. Moves 12 inches and has legitimately the best weapons available. Has the Crute Long Gun, which is a heavy precision gun at range 36. Strength 6, minus 2, 3 damage precision. And then, of course, has its Blast Javelin, which is assault D6, strength 10, minus 2, 2. Very good gun for Crute.
He's but not here's messing where around. It gets,
no, it's not. And in combat, perfectly acceptable in combat also. But this is where it gets spicy. Each time this model makes a ranged attack that hits an enemy unit until the end of the turn, each time a Crute model from your army makes an attack that targets that enemy unit, you can re-roll the hit roll. So this guy just, and this is why I don't think you're going to take the long gun, because it's just one shot on a 4+. You'd much rather with the D6 blast one shot on a 3+, to trigger this ability. You're much better off with the D6 shots on a 4+, because every Crute model on the table when fighting the thing this guy has hit will get full re-rolls to wound. Re-rolls to hit. Oath of Moment is the word that comes, is the thing that comes to mind. The entire Space Marine army, that's their army ability, is the thing this guy gives out.
He's actually, so the range difference, so the Blast Javelin is an 18-inch range, the Crute Long Gun, this single shot one is a 36-inch range, but this guy's got another cool ability called the Fire and Fade, which does basically what you would expect it to do if you've been familiar with that term from previous incarnations. In your shooting phase, after this model has a shot, if it's not within engagement range of one or more enemy units, it can make a normal move up to 6 inches. If it does, until the end of the turn, the model is not eligible to declare a charge.
I want to point out a combo for you guys that we've got together. So this is a Crute Flesh Shaper leading 20 Crute Carnivores, being supported by a Crute Lone Spear. This Crute Flesh Shaper has the Criticals 5+ enhancement, which I think is the glands, the groggy bog glands.
So close.
Yeah, spot on. I was like one syllable away, which is Critical 5s. The Crit Flesh Shaper, when joining a unit of Crit Carnivores, gives them sustained hits one in melee. And then, whilst this model's in a unit, models in that unit have a Feel No Pain 6 plus ability. That unit, once they destroy one or more enemy units in the fight phase, they have Feel No Pain 5 plus instead. So this will be a unit of 21. 20 plus the character. You can attach another character. If you have a unit of 20 crew, by the way, you can attach two characters to it. So I'm leaving it open. I'm just keeping it bare bones. But so the critical 5 pluses and has sustained hits 1 in combat. So it's going to be every 5 to hit is another hit. And then the unit goes from having just pretty much a t-shirt and then an invulnerable save to having an invulnerable save and a Feel No Pain. And then you get into combat and this crude lone spear has hit what you're charging in combat. And then you have 40 attacks with the crude carnivores, hitting on threes, re-rolling, exploding fives at strength 4. So I don't, like, if you have a 2+, you probably don't care. Everything else, that sucks.
The weight of dice will bring you down is what you're saying.
Correct. Even if you have a 2+, it's still going to suck. But you know what I mean?
The crude carnivores that you just mentioned, they can have two characters attached to them. And if it's a squad of 20, they just can't be exactly duplicate right. characters.
Yeah. So you got to mix it up. And there are a couple of good ones. Actually, they're all good for different things. You just got to pick which one makes the most sense for what the reason you're bringing the unit. There are some crew carnival units that I believe you bring to throw into your enemy's face, gum them up, flip their objectives, and then absolutely explode. And then there's probably two or three of those units that you want to go in and try and do some damage on the way out, and then they're going to explode. And then guess what? You might just win. If you went first and you're doing all that, all your crew are like eating and dying and eating again in their deployment zone, that's how you win a game.
You can't argue with that. Rinse, repeat, dip, dodge, duck, dive. Is that?
Yeah, that's the one.
Before we wrap the show up, I know we haven't talked about any of the battle suits, you know, or some of the stuff in there. This is, if you're a Tau fan, of course you're going to be all about the play in this edition. And there's a lot of cool things in this book, and we will continue to kind of unpack those maybe over the next couple episodes. Next week we do have Adepticon. And I don't know that we'll get an episode out next week because of that, because Adepticon really starts on Wednesday. So it's basically like a week of wargaming stuff. But, you know, tune in to some of the live streams happening over the weekend to get that Warhammer fix. But I want to talk about Vespids for a second.
Vespids, hey?
Vespids have been a unit that I think people have kind of been hung up on the fact that when Vespids first hit the scene, people weren't thrilled with the models and they weren't amazing. And then they've kind of, I think they've been kind of almost like put on the shelf because of how poorly they were received at the time.
That was 20 years ago. You do know that was 20 years ago.
I know. I feel like they're still carrying some of that with them right now. And I'm not saying they're great right now either. I just want to look at them with fresh eyes before we leave.
I don't believe they've changed from Index to Codex. I have seen some very strong, very capable Tau players taking a single unit of 5 because they do, of course, have the innate deep strike ability, and they're at a price point that if they were to just deep strike and get you behind enemy lines and then die, you'd be like, absolutely acceptable. They come with a relatively good gun. 2 shots at range 18 at strength 5 minus 2, 2 damage.
They hit on 4s.
Yep. So it's fine. So 10 shots with 5 of them, you know, hitting on 5s. Hitting with 5 of them, sorry. Winding with, you know, 3 or 4 of them against a space marine, killing a couple, you know, happy days. The issue is that I have with them is that the terms and conditions on their ability make no sense. At the end of your movement phase, if this unit is not within engagement range of any enemy units, you can put it, remove it from the battlefield and place it into strategic reserves. Those things usually happen at the end of your turn or at the end of your opponent's turn once you've done stuff. So at the start of your turn, before you can do anything with the unit, you put it in reserve. That one is the one I always scratched my head at. But apart from that, I love everything else about him. Movement 12, toughness 4, 4-up save, which is pretty good for an auxiliary to Tau. I think they're very respectable.
Yeah, the 18-inch range on a decent gun is pretty good. The movement 12 gives him the effective like 30-inch threat range. The innate deep strike, I think, is pretty good. And then just the jumping off the table. It happens at a bit of an awkward time, but it's still a pretty good ability. and for a pretty low point investment. So just wanted to give them a little bit of time in the sun here, see with fresh eyes, especially when some of the other stuff we were talking about, like being able to redeploy three units and then maybe pull even another unit or two off the table.
Yeah.
You could, that first couple of turns could be pretty barren, you know, not a target rich environment for your opponent. Could catch him out a little bit. You know, I don't know if that's the way you're going to play it or not, but trying to look at all options. Tau players, I think there is some options here in the book that are really compelling, and I'm not seeing one detachment that is clearly the best one yet.
For me, I do believe it's a toss up between Mon Cal and the retaliation cadre. I'd be leaning more Mon Cal at the moment, but I think it's too early to say at this point because the battle suits. Oh, sorry, I do have to say the battle suits isn't just crisis suits. Of course, you have stealth suits, you have riptides, you have ghost keels, you have a lot. Funnily enough, not the storm surge, not a battle suit. It's a walker because the dudes, you see the little pilots in there. I can see them. That's not a battle suit. But anyway, riptides are, if the points are correct in the Minotaurian field manual moving forward, riptides are priced to go. They are extremely aggressively costed, and they're very, very, very potent in this detachment. But for my mind, I love Mon Cal. Mon Cal would be my pick, especially because it plays a very well-rounded game. So if you wanted to pick it up and you weren't keen on Kalyon, you just play the other side of the coin, give Mon Cal a go, and be a little bit more front-loaded than back-loaded. Apart from that, still a very powerful way to play.
There we go. That's our show this week. Thanks a lot for listening. Hope you all enjoyed the review and that box edit. I can't say it enough. It's probably going to go pretty quick. Like I would, just with all the stars aligning, new models, first time to get a hold of the book, and then it being a very popular faction, I would suspect that if you were even thinking about it, do not delay, or you might end up being disappointed. And then if you're not a Tau player, just enjoy the fact that all the people that are Tau players are going to get something cool. And that's our show this week. I've had a blast. That is Thus Endeth Season 2.
The hallowed, long-lived Season 2.
Check out our sponsors. Please leave the 5-star reviews. Consider joining us on Patreon if you so choose. If that is something you can do. Otherwise, we'll see y'all probably in a couple weeks. Be back soon, everybody. Good night.
Boy.
Bye, everybody.
Tenets demand you tune in next week for the greater good, of course.